listening to People Powered Radio, proudly supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. cbf.com.au.
Welcome to Community Connections. I'm Alan Collier and it's my pleasure to be with you. For the first hour, we're going to talk about men's health. And I think this is something that we need to talk about. And I'm really pleased to have with me Mr. Tony D'Souza. He's with the Melbourne Urology Centre. Welcome, Tony.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
It's a pleasure to have you. It's a subject that we really need to cover. Tony, could I just ask you, first of all, what made you decide to specialise in this field? Is there a reason behind it, or was it just one of those things that happened?
I actually gave a talk to a group of about 170 medical students last week, and that was one of the questions that came up. Look, it's a fantastic field of medicine. It's certainly not something that I always dreamed of doing, throughout my intern year, I was fortunate enough to have a rotation in urology, and I really enjoyed the rotation. The people that I worked with were fantastic, and there was just so much variety in the work that we could do, and so many different ways you could help people out.
Oh, that's terrific.
And so sort of fell into it that way.
Tony, let's talk about it. During COVID, has there been a drop-off in guys that have been getting tested at all?
Yeah, look, obviously COVID's been challenging for everybody, for patients, particularly for GPs being at the front line. I guess as urologists, we're a little bit protected. I think anecdotally I would say that patients probably have put off being tested. I think it probably will take a number of months or even years before we realise the impact of that. When we talk about prostate cancer, I guess one of the things is it doesn't cause any symptoms. So you can imagine men historically are a bit reluctant to go and see the doctor anyway, let alone when they're feeling good. And so those sort of things fall by the wayside. And so, you know, I have seen, unfortunately, a few men who perhaps have presented a bit later than what they may have otherwise. So yep. I'll say yes.
All right. Do you think the reason behind that is that a man will use any excuse not to go to the doctors, or do you think there's been a real fright of being out amongst people and maybe picking up COVID?
Yeah, I think, I think men are much better these days at actually going and getting checked, and I'm seeing lots of men who come in and, you know, they really just want to get checked out, which is fantastic, and men are talking now, and there's a lot of men's health groups and men's shed and prostate cancer support groups and these sort of things. So I think men are more willing to talk, and so probably it's, you know, a bit of a fear of actually going out. And the GPs have just been overrun as well. So not sure if you know, but, you know, we've been doing a lot of our consultations via telehealth, and the GPs as well.
Yep.
And they've just had their hands full looking after sick patients. So, you know, these sort of things like screening tests and prostate cancer is only one of them. I'm sure bowel cancer and breast cancer and all these other things fall into a similar category. So, hopefully, you know, we are seeing a bit of a lag. But men are coming through the door now, which is great.
That's great. All right, so let's get into it now. Let's really talk about, because I've got a few questions we want to ask you. The first one is, at what age should a guy start, well, not just think about, but start going and having a test?
Yeah, so we recommend, what you're talking about is getting a test, getting a PSA test. That's a blood test.
Yep.
So we recommend men from the age of 50. If they're interested in, you know, assessing their prostate cancer risk. And this can do two things. It can assess their risk at that particular point in time, and we often pick up prostate cancers at that point. But we also can flag men who are perhaps more at risk of developing a prostate cancer in future. So depending on the PSA reading, we can categorise men into a group who probably will never develop prostate cancer, and we don't have to watch them as closely. Then there's some men who have a reading a little bit above where it should be, and we need to keep a close eye on them. And then there's men who we will pick up at that initial time of screening with prostate cancer. So 50 is the usual age. If there's a strong family history of prostate cancer, then we recommend considering from earlier, so maybe 40 or even 40, 45.
So just because you've got the symptoms, you know, and I know you said that often there aren't symptoms, but sometimes there are, where the guys are up three and four times a night. But just because the symptoms are there doesn't actually mean the patient has got cancer, does it?
it's almost actually the opposite, Alan. I see a lot of men who come in and they've got these symptoms, and sometimes they've been dragged along by their partner who says, you know, he wakes up three or four times at night and, you know, he's up to the toilet, and that disturbs me as well. And often these men, they actually don't have prostate cancer. They have symptoms of an enlarged prostate, which is a different process that happens as men get older. But at least it brings them along to the doctor and they get checked out. And some of these guys are petrified that they've got cancer. And sometimes all we need to do, you know, I assess them and reassure them they haven't got cancer, and they're relieved. And then some of them are happy to put up with their symptoms. On the flip side, I deal with a lot of men who have a blood test, a PSA test, with their GP. They get sent along to me and I diagnose cancer, and they just can't believe it because they've got no symptoms at all. So it's really contradictory that the men with cancer generally don't have symptoms, and often these men with terrible symptoms just have an enlarged prostate. So two different things.
And I suppose the one with the enlarged goes away feeling terrific because they've probably been worried for months, I've got cancer, and then all of a sudden they know they haven't. I mean, it would be a terrific relief, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. So you know, one of the first things I do when they come in is I ask them, you know, is that something they're worried about? And often they've been too scared to say it, but yes. And then when I can check them out and say, look, you've got an enlarged prostate, but you haven't got cancer, it is a big relief. Obviously, a lot of those men do still require, or they do benefit from treatment for their symptoms. Yep. But yeah, it's making that differentiation.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley. And we're talking all things at the moment. We're talking all things about men's health. And I have with me Mr. Tony D'Souza from the Melbourne Urology Centre, and obviously he's a urologist. Tony, we've got a question. I'm not sure how you would answer this, but we've got a 45-year-old male listening. He wants to have a test, but he doesn't mind having the follow-up test, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But what he says, well, you know, if I've got something in my body, it could have been growing over the last 20, 25 years. So did we tell him just to man up and get on with it? Or what would you say to a guy like that who says, well, I'm happy to have a test once I know there's nothing there?
Yeah, so it's good that men are thinking about it. So probably 45, you know, if there's no family history, we say between 45 and 50, you can go along and get a blood test. Blood test is, you know, the PSA test is not a perfect test. It just gives an indication of your overall prostate cancer risk. So, you know, once you've had the test, obviously if it's normal, that's great. If it's a low reading, nothing else needs to be done further. I guess you need to accept if the test is abnormal. What do we do next? Usually we repeat a test to make sure it's a true reading. You can get spuriously elevated readings. There's a clinical examination, a check of the prostate involved, and then we often have MRI scans as well. And the point on could it have been there for a long time if there's cancer? Well, we do know from studies that prostate cancer can develop in men as young as in their 30s, but most cancers occur in men over their 60s. One of the reassuring things, I guess, for men thinking about going to get a test, that a diagnosis of prostate cancer these days doesn't necessarily mean you need treatment. We're moving away from treating low-grade prostate cancers, and so for a lot of those men with low-grade cancers, we simply are aware of it, we can monitor it, and many of those men never need any treatment, and we can just keep them under close observation.
Doctor, I suppose this is probably getting a bit too technical for us and the listeners. How do you know whether a cancer is a low grade, as they say, you'll die with it, not because of it, or whether it's something else? Is that done through blood tests, or how do you pick that?
So we take a few things into consideration, but the most important thing that we look at is what the pathologist looks at under the microscope when we take a biopsy. So you can't really diagnose prostate cancer without having a biopsy.
Oh, it's mainly a biopsy.
And then the pathologist will look at the specimen under the microscope and they assign it a score. It's called a Gleason score, and I won't bore you too much with that. But that gives us the best indication of whether this is a fairly indolent cancer or something that needs treating.
Yeah. All right. So there seems to be a lot of talk, and this is another question we've had, that years ago, it used to almost be just the PSA test, that was all was done. Then, not to put too fine a point on it, the finger test came in, which must be a terrible job for a doctor to do. But anyway, that's their job. And now this listener seems to think there's a bit of a swing back more so to the PSA than the finger test. Is there a reason behind that, or is that just that the listener's wrong?
No, that's spot on. It's an imperfect science. A PSA test is not a prostate cancer test as such. It's a prostate test. So there can be other reasons why you can have an elevated PSA. The examination, the rectal examination of the prostate, is a fairly non-specific test as well. The other thing that we do have these days, though, is we also have prostate MRI scans. So we put all that information together, PSA blood test, examination findings, MRI scan, family history, symptoms, and then we decide, well, which patients need a biopsy. As a general rule, GPs often not necessarily doing examinations, but PSA screening, if there's an elevated PSA test, they'll often send the patients along to us and we take it from there. So PSA is still very important, but it is a bit of a crude test still.
Yep. All right. And also, what's your recommendation of how often should a patient be tested? So they go, they have all the tests done the first time, or they go, we'll say they go along at 50, they have their first PSA, not too bad. Well, there's no problems there. So how often should they then front back to their doctor to have a PSA test?
Yeah, usually a PSA test is done as a once-a-year test, and in men who have a PSA lower than expected for their age, then that can even be pushed out to 2 years in some cases. So yeah, it's not something that needs to be done very often. The time that we would do it often is if we have a man who has been diagnosed with cancer and we've taken the decision that this is a low-grade cancer and we're going to watch it. Yeah. Those men will often have a PSA test done more often, say every 3 months. Right. Along with repeat MRI scans.
Now, this is from the uneducated, because we don't know. You're the master. Do the PSA tests ever go down? If once you've had a figure, does it always just stick there and go up, or do they ever drop without any treatment?
Yeah, look, so PSA is quite labile. It can fluctuate from month to month even. So we look at long-term trends rather than absolute numbers. If a man has a certain PSA reading in 3 months it's gone up or down, we look at a longer trend over time. So it can go up, can go down. We're mainly interested in when we're screening and making sure that the trend isn't going upwards too much.
Welcome back to Community Connections, and I have with me Dr. Tony D'Souza, or Mr. Tony D'Souza, from the Melbourne Urology Centre, and we're talking all things about prostate and men's health. Tony, is there anything that a person can do? Like, does diet or exercise or anything help or try and stave it off, or is it just more in your genes and your lifestyle rather than something the likes of those?
You have a lot of men sort of ask that question. There's been a lot of research into dietary factors and environmental factors, and really the two main risk factors, one being a man and second one getting older. And those things you can't change that. Family history is also pretty important as well. If you've got a first degree relative with prostate cancer, you've got a 2 or 3 times increased risk. Again, you can't choose your family. What we do, just on that though, just because we don't know that there are modifiable risk factors doesn't mean there are things, and there's certainly plenty of research on cancer in general that, exercise, being healthy diet, losing weight, moderate alcohol intake, they all reduce your overall risk of cancer. And so I think they're good things that I advise my patients to follow. But there's nothing that we know can make it worse or better.
No, that's fair enough too. And I guess that if you're going to get sick, I guess the fitter you are, the better off you are, aren't you? So that if there has to be an operation or anything, you're always going to get over it better if you're fit than unfit, aren't you?
Absolutely, yeah. So, I have a number of patients when they're diagnosed with prostate cancer. It's one of those things that you don't necessarily have to rush in and operate, and some men do benefit from quitting smoking for, you know, a few weeks or a couple of months beforehand, or losing a few kegs, makes my job a lot easier as well, that's for sure.
Doctor, I was looking up the website, obviously, to so that I knew a bit about it, what I was talking about, apart from being a guy. I see that you have minimal invasive treatment. I'm intrigued as to what that means.
Yeah. So if we're talking prostate cancer, one of the big revolutionary changes has been the introduction of robotic surgery. I perform all my prostate cancer surgery as a robotic-assisted approach. So that obviously doesn't mean the robot doing the surgery. I'm still doing the surgery, but we do it as a keyhole approach. And that has a number of advantages for patients with quicker recovery, less bleeding, it gives us 3D vision and small instruments that can get into places that, you know, previously had to try and squeeze hands into. So it's been fantastic for patients, and it's probably prolonged a few surgeons' careers as well. It's much easier on the surgeon too.
True. All right. So you actually use the robot, do you, to do the operation? But you're the one who guides the robot. Is that how it works?
Yeah. So the surgeon's always in control of the robot. It's an advance on laparoscopic traditional keyhole surgery. The instruments have much better movement, finer dexterity, and we can perform very delicate procedures to do a nerve sparing operation to ensure that men keep their sexual function after surgery where possible, to maintain their continence, to improve the outcomes and make sure we're not leaving any cancer behind.
I was going to ask you that. Erectile dysfunction, does that automatically come along with prostate cancer, or are they two completely different things?
So it's not related to the cancer directly, but erectile dysfunction is such a common thing anyway that, you know, in the same age group, you know, we're talking men over 50, so approximately 50% of men in our society over the age of 50 already start having troubles with their erections. That increases as men get older. Prostate cancer doesn't directly affect erectile function, but the treatments can. It's unavoidable in many cases, and, you know, we try to preserve function where it's practical, but the priority always in these cases has to be to make sure that we're curing the cancer. That's the number one goal there.
Well, I guess the main thing is everybody wants to live longer, don't they? And if you've got to do it with a few things that don't work as well, I guess that's probably better off, isn't it?
Wherever possible, we can preserve sexual function, and there are a lot of good treatments available too. And we've got a fantastic nurse who does a lot of work with us, and she spends a lot of time with men, counselling them leading up to surgery. And look, we've got plenty of treatments. And I often say to patients, I can guarantee you erections after the surgery, but it just depends whether they come back naturally or whether you need some assistance with medication or even surgery later on.
And I have with me Mr. Tony D'Souza from the Melbourne Urology Centre, and we're talking all things health-wise for men, and so far we've mainly on prostate cancer. Doctor, can I ask you, there seems to be popping up on Facebook quite a lot, if you're going to the toilet six times a night or a lot of times a night, take these supplements. From a doctor's point of view and a medical point of view, are the supplements much good? Or the other thing that I will ask you is if someone's got this and they go taking these supplements, could that be masking something more serious?
Yeah, I think my first point on that would be I would worry about people sort of self-diagnosing, self-managing. There are plenty of supplements out there. And when we're talking supplements, I think with those symptoms that you're talking about, we're talking about men with an enlarged prostate, BPH, rather than prostate cancer. And there is evidence that there are sort of these over-the-counter, natural, if you like, treatments. Some of them can be effective. But I think it's really important to have a chat with your GP if you're experiencing those symptoms, because, as you point out, there could be some underlying problems, such as prostate cancer or bladder cancer, or many other things can cause those symptoms. And it's important to see your family doctor to do an initial assessment. If they're concerned, they'll obviously get you along to see someone like myself as a specialist. Often the GP will be able to make sure that everything's okay, and then yeah, it might be fine to try one of those supplements. But my main point on that would be not to self-diagnose and not to start taking things without at least having a chat with your GP first.
That's fair enough too. This is probably an unfair question to throw at you without giving you any notice. Out of the patients that would be referred to you, because there is a bit of a problem, what percentage would roughly turn out to be cancer, and what therefore what percentage would be able to walk away and say, phew, nothing to worry about?
It's a tough one to put a percentage on, yep. but I would still say more often than not that even men who are coming with an elevated PSA, the blood test, more often than not, they do not have cancer. So I think it's important for patients not to be afraid of going to get the test and getting checked out. And often we can provide reassurance, and in, you know, in a percentage of men we will find cancer. And as I said earlier, not all cancers need treatment.
Yep. And I guess one of the things too that, and I'm only going to throw this over to you, it's no good putting it off, because if the more progressive it gets, the worse it's going to be for you, isn't it?
In the era of pre-PSA blood test screening, the only way that men would be diagnosed with prostate cancer was once it was too late and it spread into the bones. And fortunately, we don't see that very often these days. We still do see it, but fortunately not as often. So the whole idea of doing these tests is that if there is something there, you pick it up early enough that you can either keep an eye on it or you can treat it before it gets away and you can cure it. And there is evidence that PSA screening, prostate cancer screening, saves lives. And it is still a big health issue in Australia. More men die from prostate cancer every year in Australia than women die from breast cancer. So we've still got a lot of work to do.
And there's a lot more done for breast cancer than what there is for prostate cancer too, isn't there?
Well, I won't make it a sort of comparative thing. I think there's a lot done for both. And I think there's a lot more that can be done. And prostate cancer is not just the disease of old men. As I said earlier, there are men in their 40s diagnosed with prostate cancer, and there are older men with prostate cancer who will die with it, not from it. And I think we're a bit more judicious about who gets treatment now, and we don't treat everybody.
Oh, fair enough. Just a quick question before we have to take another break. You mentioned before the PSA test. I didn't know there was a prior to PSA. So when did the PSA test come in?
PSA was introduced in the late 1980s.
Was it?
What are you going on? Close to 40 years now. But it hasn't been around forever, and it's not a perfect test. We're still trying to come up with a better test, but it's the best we've got at the moment. But that goes along, as I said, with the examination, family history, MRI scans.
Is there more work being done on to try and improve the PSA test?
Yeah, there's a few variations on the PSA test, but it's still not a prostate cancer specific sort of thing. It's it can be elevated because of an enlarged prostate or infection or all sorts of other things.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I have with me Mr. Tony D'Souza, as we said, from the Melbourne Urology Centre. Tony, I'm sitting at home, I'm listening to this, and need a bit of convincing. So in the next few minutes, I'm going to ask you, what should we be saying to those people, please?
Yeah, I think the important thing is to have that discussion with your GP. Some men will decide that they would rather not know, and that's a personal decision. And so there are some GPs and some family doctors who don't advocate for PSA testing, and some won't. You know, they won't offer it necessarily unless you ask. So I think if you're interested in assessing your prostate cancer risk and you'd rather know, go along, talk to your GP and ask for a test. There is, as I said earlier, there's good evidence that PSA screening saves lives. It's not something that men need to be afraid of doing. We've got lots of good treatments these days, and a diagnosis of prostate cancer is certainly not a death sentence. A lot of cancers don't need treatment, and we've got good treatment options for the ones that do.
Doctor, what happens, and we have heard of this in one case, country town, only one GP, and he says, I don't believe in that, I'm not going to test. Should the patient insist, or should the patient... Because in some of these country towns, there's only one doctor. And I do know where this happened once.
Yeah, I grew up in a country town. There was more than one doctor. One of them was my dad. He's still my dad there in Kilmore. But as I said, some GPs are a bit against PSA testing. I think if you ask, most GPs will oblige. And ultimately, you know, if that's something that you want to do, then you've got to ask for it. And, you know, maybe you have to find a different GP if you're not able to build that rapport. On the flip side, I think the GP should always talk to the patient before doing the test. Yep. So it goes both ways.
Doctor, why would a doctor not want to do it? You know, why would they not offer it?
PSA testing has been a bit controversial, and one of the things is that in the past, prostate cancer was probably overdiagnosed and overtreated. And so I think some family doctors, you know, of course a family doctor's priority is to look after their patient. They're all there to look after their patient, and they don't want to see a patient who they think probably doesn't need treatment getting unnecessary treatment. So as specialists, we have to gain a bit of trust back from GPs that not necessarily making a diagnosis of prostate cancer isn't the bad thing. It's, you know, making sure you treat them appropriately. And so a lot of low-grade prostate cancers can be watched, and older men with prostate cancer will often die of something else, so we don't need to treat them as well. So we're interested in picking up men primarily between 50 and 70 who've got a good life expectancy, in whom, you know, diagnosis of prostate cancer would potentially shorten their life.
Are we saying over 70 that you're going to die from something else anyway, or are we saying they're a bit of a throwaway?
age is certainly not the cutoff. That's where the most research has been done. Right. But what we say is if you've got a, you know, anywhere between 6 and 8 year life expectancy, and we know in Australia life expectancy is around 85, so, you know, we're certainly not throwing those men away by any stretch. That's where most of the research has been done. And, you know, the treatments change. So often if we're diagnosing men in their 80s, you know, it'd be uncommon to treat those men. But we keep an eye on this. You know, there are other problems from prostate cancer other than dying from it. It can cause symptoms, so we can, you know, look at other treatments other than surgery.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough too. I'll throw this one at you again, and it's again probably a bit unfair. And out of the people that you see again, what percentage would or a rough percentage would go on to have an operation compared to the percentage that you've really reassured or says, well, we'll just keep an eye on this person for the next few years?
Yeah, thinking of total numbers, yeah. I mean, I try not to find low-grade cancers. We try to go out of our way not to find those cancers. We try and focus on finding the ones that do need treatment. What I will say is most men that I see with low-grade cancer will go on surveillance rather than having treatment.
Yep.
And then of the men who have an intermediate or high-risk cancer, we have a discussion about surgery, or radiation is the other treatment that's very effective for treating prostate cancer.
I guess out of this whole hour that we've been talking, and I'll leave you to wind it up, would be it's better to go and have the test and be checked out than to just worry about it and do nothing about it. Am I right?
That would be my opinion. Yeah, so look, ultimately it comes down to the individual. Have a chat with your GP. If you're interested in assessing your prostate cancer risk, go along and get the test done. It may certainly provide you with a bit of reassurance, so you don't have that nagging thought in the back of your head. And if it does pick something up, well, you know, you can go on to have treatment and a cure, hopefully, if it's been picked up early enough.
Well, I guess the other problem is it's not going to go away, is it?
No, if there prostate is cancer it doesn't go away, and that's another thing. Patients ask about, you know, what other treatments they can have, or supplements and so on. There's no supplements or, you know, herbal things that can treat prostate cancer. And unfortunately, we do see some patients from time to time try natural remedies and it doesn't go well. So I'm not against natural remedies in combination with science.
I guess maybe some people get a bit desperate and think they'll try other things because they don't want to go under the knife. But I guess what you're saying too, that apart from the fact that a lot don't, with this new minimal invasive treatment, it's not going to turn out to be a major operation if it's caught early enough, is it?
Yeah, look, we're improving outcomes for patients all the time, so improving recovery time, improving cancer outcomes and getting patients back on their feet. Look, it's still major surgery, but it's done as a minimally invasive way. Just on the point of the supplements, I guess, you know, we need to be aware that there are people out there who will perhaps take advantage of vulnerable people and offer other cures or magic cures that that just, you know, end up being very expensive and ineffective. So I would advise patients, if they're interested, to look at the Prostate Cancer Foundation of Australia's website for a bit of guidance.